This is exactly right.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Scotty, ready?
Curdy B, I am so ready to, you guessed it, laugh and laugh and laugh.
Police.
Uh-oh. Cops.
Woman arrested after police find $2,500 worth of Stanley Cups in her car.
Oh, boy. Wow, that seems like a really big car. All right. Well, this episode of Bananas promises to be good until the last drop.
Oh, I like that.
Bananas.
Guys, gals, non-binary pals, welcome to Bananas. Sitting across from me is the delightfully hilarious and intelligent screenwriter extraordinaire and my best bud, Scotty Landis.
And there's Kurt. I'm kidding. I love that guy. If you see one comic before you die, make sure it's the one and only headliner himself, Curdy B, Kurt Brown Oler, who I'm going to see tonight for a dinner.
I'm so excited. I texted Kristen. Our friend Kristen is having a birthday dinner.
Wonderful.
And I texted her and I was just like, I am unreasonably excited about tonight.
Great group of people. Happy birthday to our great friend Kristen Shaw. Thanks for inviting us. Thanks for still being our friend.
She had to cancel it because she had COVID. Now we're back having
dinner. We're back, baby.
Wait. And then I'm going to Jersey. I'm going to Jersey this weekend. Mike Merrill's getting married.
Wow.
So excited.
Yeah, so your dry January is very over now.
Oh, it is done. It is. And not only does it go done, it goes off a cliff.
Yes,
like right to Jersey? Right to Jersey with my oldest friends?
Yeah, you are swimming in it. You are back in. You are diving head off the wagon, head into the booze ocean. Well, that's cool.
I'm so excited. I'm feeling good today. I don't know what it is. Rainy day in Los Angeles, and I'm feeling inspired. I'm feeling happy.
Did the wind wake you up last night?
It did not, because I was already up. Gus is just, he loves to get in the bed and then kick, kick, kick.
Kids love to kick.
He does not stop moving.
Mm-hmm.
How are you feeling?
I'm feeling great too. I'm in an excellent mood. I just love recording this podcast.
I really do.
Welcome. If this is your first time listening to Bananas,
yes,
it's probably weird hearing us talk like this, but we do talk about strange news stories. We do comment on them.
Oh, yes.
So last night I was asleep. There was a huge wind storm, really. Uh-huh. It was rainy too. And at some point I heard like the wind hit the house, and I was like, man, but listen to that rain. That pitter-patter of rain is just going to put me right back to Sleepy Town. And then I heard like a couple bangs, like not loud bangs, but like if you imagine holding a shoe up in the air and dropping it from 5 feet.
But that's the scariest sound.
Yeah, boom, boom. And then I wasn't fading right back off to the land of Rip Van Winkle. And then I heard it again, and I opened my eyes and sat up and realized that my doors were blown completely open and had been for probably an hour. So just rain and wind just blowing in the bedroom.
Are you joking?
just blowing right in.
Wait, you did not notice that a storm?
Yeah. I didn't notice.
That's crazy.
It was crazy.
Because your bedroom just opens right onto a deck, right? Onto a balcony.
Yeah, that's right. And so it was like, and the sound of the rain was loud enough, the wind was loud enough that I just thought it was really coming down out there, but it turns out it was really coming down in here. It was like a Meatloaf music video from the early 90s. It was like doors, like billowing curtains.
Yes.
It's like Bon Jovi's Bed of Roses. And I'm like, so I just get up, shut them, and go right back to sleep. But it was so, I mean, thank God. I mean, thank God it wasn't worse than it was. But it was a brisk way to wake up at 3 a.m.
Also, you must be a very good sleeper because the wind, to not be woken by the wind, and this was like a huge storm for those of you not in Los Angeles. This was what they call an atmospheric river.
Yeah, we get those a lot now.
We sure do. It's kind of the main thing about California now.
Yeah, the rainiest place in the world. Sorry, Kauai. It does rain here a lot.
Did you have carpet in that bedroom?
No, there's no carpet there. So nothing was ruined. There was no damage. It was just as if it was a little bit like camping, to be honest with you. So all good. I fell right back asleep. And so, I'm feeling energized. We sold out our Seattle show already. Thank
Seattle's
you, Seattle.
Gone. Actually, no. There are four seats.
Yeah, four crazy seats.
In the weirdest place I've ever seen. This place looks very cool, Triple Door in Seattle. But there's four seats that are behind a glass partition. I think it's like a classic. It almost seems like, because in Catholic churches, there used to be a little area where you could bring crying babies. Do you remember that? It was behind glass, and it was like soundproof.
Yeah,
so no one would be bothered by the act of raising children, the most natural process on planet Earth.
I know, maybe it's the perfect place for our 420 friendly bananas hotboxers out there too. We're not going to say anything, but maybe four friends just show up and who knows what happens next? But it seems contained. It seems like a great place to do it.
And then, of course, Portland, we just put those on sale at the Old Church on April 19th. And then all the tickets are now on sale for Chicago.
Boom.
Madison.
Kapowie.
Minneapolis. Yeet. May 3rd, 4th, and 5th. Mm-hmm. So, come on. We're playing cool places. We're playing cool places. We're playing the Den in Chicago. We're playing Comedy on State on Madison. And the Parkway Theater in Minneapolis. We're coming back to the Parkway. Coming back to the Den.
But I got
to
say, I got my eye on Madison. I just think that's going to be the crowd.
Oh, really?
I think Seattle's going to knock our socks off because the Tacoma show was so good. But I have this feeling that coming out of the winter, that these Wisconsinites are going to come and bring the cheese curd thunder on us.
All right. I like what you're saying. Because my experience has been that once you get to that part of the country and you hit not negative 8 degrees, no one is going inside ever until September.
That's fair, too. Well, come inside. Drink. I mean, it is like a bar, so I think
And it's in the afternoon.
Too.
It's in the afternoon, so you can be done by 5 or whatever.
Wisconsin, let's do it. Madison, let's do it. Curdy B, let's do it.
Woman arrested after police found $2,500 worth of Stanley Cups in her car.
Wow, that's a lot.
What's
that, like 50? 80? I don't know how much those things are.
They have them all lined up on front of the police cruiser.
Cool photo.
They cover the entire hood of a police cruiser, and then also the front section that they have like that battering ram on the front, and they have them all lined up there as well. Mm-hmm. So it's a ton. The reason I'm telling this story, this was an NBC News. This was by Patrick Smith. Often has said, the most hydrated and best of the biz.
Best of the biz and in the biz.
The way she stole them is my favorite part.
Oh, good.
The craze for Stanley stainless steel drinking cups reached new levels last week.
Okay.
When a woman was arrested and accused of stealing 65 of them worth almost $2,500 from a store in California. Police in Roseville in Placer County, northeast of Sacramento, said Sunday that they were called Wednesday to a report of a theft from a store on Stanford Ranch Road. quote, staff saw a woman take a shopping cart full of Stanley water bottles without paying for them. The suspect refused to stop for staff and stuffed her car with stolen merchandise. An officer spotted the suspect vehicle as it entered Highway 65. So far, unnamed woman, 23, of course.
Of course.
Was arrested and accused of grand theft, which seems like a lot, but I guess it's...
$2,000?
It's a lot of money.
Yeah. It's a lot of steel.
Stanley cups have become highly blah, 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 blah,
blah, blah.
And then the quote, the police quote says, while Stanley quenchers are all the rage, we strongly against turning to crime to fulfill your hydration habits.
That's true. Or just steal one. 65? You're not that popular. Even at 23.
Crazy. That's a lot.
That's a lot. Also, the fact that it was just pile them into a... into a grocery cart and just cruise. There's no hiding it. Just full on. The staff is being like, please stop. Don't do that. Don't steal all those Stanleys. She's going, eat shit. Just walks them out to her car.
And you know they were clanking and clanging all the way out the door. That is not a silent crime.
Also, none of these Stanley cups are like the colors that are like worth anything. They're all gray and like black and dark blue. As I understand the Stanley craze, it's like for hot pink and like really bright colors.
Well, it seems like it's a TikTok, right? TikTok kind of relaunched this, and then first of all, hilarious that she tried to get away with this.
I love it.
There's always something being collected. I feel like people knock Stanley so hard because it seems to be something that girls and women are really into,
and that's like, why. Yeah,
is it any dumber than, I don't know, guys that have 40 bottles of scotch that they don't drink in their closet?
Is it any dumber than Yeti? It's not dumber than Yeti. Yeti is the dumbest thing out there. You had a tweet a while back where it was who knew 2020 would be the year that everybody gets real serious about coolers?
$300 coolers. Yeah, it was something about how expensive coolers were. But Stanley, okay, I have a second scorching hot take that's going to blast people's ears off their head.
I'm ready. Oh, my God, I love a hot take.
Go further, ladies. it's a product made in 1913 by William Stanley Jr.
Really?
He figured out a way to weld steel that would create a vacuum seal.
Mm-hmm.
And then he died. And then now it's owned by some company in Seattle.
And apparently, Mr. Stanley loved to use a little bit of lead in the bottom.
Just enough.
And that is, I just read it. I don't know why I read so many Stanley Cup articles, but there was one
too,
about the lead in Stanley Cups that, like, don't worry, doesn't get to your mouth. It's literally in the sealant on the bottom.
Yeah, he died at 57, so who knows? Who knows if it's connected? But what I'm saying, hot take, is go further. This, up until, let's say, 4 or 5 years ago, this was a product used by lumberjacks, steel workers, blue collar pillars of society. So I'm saying, ladies, take your Stanley quencher, add a hard hat, add a chainsaw, add a sledgehammer. Just don't stop halfway. Go all the way and embrace blue collar.
Get a Stanley metal lunchbox.
Yes.
Yes, that's what I want to see.
Drink tomato soup and pour it in the lid and sip it while you just like contemplate how to build a dam with a river that won't stop. Go further is my hot take, because it's fun. I think this is cool. Also, when this fad ends, it's great because all the parents and aunts and uncles and like younger siblings are just going to inherit an ocean of Stanley quenchers. It's great.
I love that it's called the quencher.
I think they're cool, by the way. I think it's a cool product. Like, I don't think this is dumb.
No, are you kidding me? You're talking to the man who was told by his doctor that he drinks too much water. This is right up my alley. Giant, giant handle that also can fit into a car. That's the reason that they're popular, in my opinion.
They fit in the cup holder.
They fit in the cup holder. They're 40 ounces, and they have a handle.
I also read that they were not doing that great, the quencher size. And then the new president or the company that owns Stanley now hired the guy that ran Crocs, and that he was the one that... Now it's selling at like 300% of what it was. But it's like the dude that made Crocs a big deal made Stanley. So wear your Crocs, wear a backwards hard hat, carry an axe, drink out of your Stanley quencher, live your best life.
Did you see that thing that was going around as a meme a little while ago about how in Idiocracy, Mike Judge was like, I want the dumbest looking shoes you can find.
Yes.
And that there was this brand new shoe company, the wardrobe designer found called Crocs. And everyone in Idiocracy is wearing Crocs. And it does feel perfect for us.
We came back around. Yes. She was like, nobody, these aren't, I think she thought they were so stupid and ugly that it would almost be like distractingly ridiculous. And Mike Judge, in his infinite wisdom, was like, put them in. Put them in. Damn, that's great. Yeah, I'm all for this. I mean, I'm not for stealing 65 of them. Don't get that greedy, but it's a fun thing to collect. They last forever. Maybe. Yeah. I bet we get a story in the next 2 years that a stray bullet is stopped by a Stanley Quencher and saves a life.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. Also, I saw a guy. This is where my Instagram algorithm is at. I follow a man who just burns things with a giant mirror. Yeah, yeah, of course I do.
Yeah, of course.
And it's like it focuses the sun. He lives in like Arizona, and yes. It focuses the sun's. It's like a giant magnifying glass with yes. a mirror. And so he has burned. I've watched him burn like anything you can imagine. I've seen him burn it, and all of them burn, and all of them break. Okay. And he did it to a Stanley cup.
No way.
And just left it on, and it's just like a laser burning, and he couldn't go all the way through it.
Incredible.
I don't know if he was being paid. I don't know if this was a paid thing. But it didn't seem like it because it was just like a very offhand. But so anyway, yeah, they're indestructible as well.
That's
also, I
a
can't
very funny person to follow. I'm glad you follow that.
Are you kidding me?
I'm not kidding you.
I got boat launches.
Well, that's fun.
I got boat launches. I got guys who burn things, and then people who live in trucks in Alaska. That's like my main follows, and then surfers.
That's cool. Speaking of Alaska, isn't there a thing, sort of Stanley product related, but not really, but working person product? Isn't there like a ball in Alaska for Carhartt, for people who've survived because their Carhartt clothing kept them alive?
I hope there is.
I'm almost positive there is. I think it's in Alaska, and it's like a yearly thing where if Carhartt has saved your life from the bitter cold, there's like a gala.
From the bitter cold? Oh, not from injuries, from machines.
I think anything. Okay. But if anybody knows, if we have any Alaskan bananimals, one, we want to come do a show up there in a real way. And two, have you ever been to the Carhartt I Survived Ball Festival
also,
Gala?
There is a competing ball that's across the street of people who have lost their hands by getting their Carhartt gloves caught in a machine and then it pulling the rest of their hand in. And these people fight at the end of the night, and it's beautiful.
It's a lot of kicking, I'll tell you that much. Anyway, here's speaking of... Okay, I have one that's sort of crime related. This was sent by Emily Linz Coog, who I waited tables with.
What?
Maybe even had to train at Two Boots in Brooklyn years ago.
Wow.
She's an excellent artist, wonderful artist. And I think she listens to Bananas. So
yay.
Thank you, Emily Linz Coog. Hope to hang out with you again soon. So this one's crime related. This one's got layers, Curdy B. So I'm going to skip around the article to get to the main points.
Okay.
Chicago area man who sued women for bad-mouthing him on a dating site, convicted only days later of tax fraud.
Wow.
Involving tax fraud, not
enough. Oh, it's not over. It's not over yet. This is still the headline.
You wish. This is still the headline.
Okay.
Days later of tax fraud involving mob-connected sweepstakes kiosks. What did I just say?
What is going on? I don't know, but I'm excited for you to tell me.
So this was in the Chicago Tribune, written by the best in the biz, Jason Meisner. He is good at typing up really long headlines.
He's very good.
His editor is like, don't come in here unless you got a 30-word headline.
The copy editor was like, we can't leave any piece of this out. So much of that could have been left out.
Sure. It could have just said, man sues women for bad-mouthing him, convicted days later of sweepstakes fraud.
There we go.
Damn, he's good. Chicago. Chicago area native Nico D'Ambrosia. made a national media splash earlier this month, Kurt, when he filed a lawsuit against dozens of women who allegedly were bad-mouthing him on a tell-all Facebook dating page, describing him as clingy, a ghoster.
I couldn't imagine a better name for a serial dater, a man who's manipulating people with romance than Nico D'Ambrosia.
Yes. I know. That is a heck of a name.
That's a
Nico
great
D'Ambrosia.
Name.
If it was a great guy, you go, well, I love that Nico D'Ambrosia. I'm going to have him over and grill him some wet meat or whatever they eat there. And he was a huge show off with his money. Turns out D'Ambrosia's dating reviews were the least of his worries. God, Jason Meisner's good. I mean, this guy just takes words and paints pictures. D'Ambrosia, 32, was convicted in the same federal courthouse where his lawsuit of pending tax fraud, blah, blah, blah. So this is what he was doing.
Okay.
He was working. Oh, after a four-day trial and only 90 minutes of deliberation, he was convicted for two counts of filing false tax returns, each carrying a maximum prison term of up to 3 years. There is this funny detail. So he was a small fish ensnared in an overall investigation about the shady world of sweepstakes kiosks. I didn't know what those were.
I don't know what they are.
I barely do, and I looked them up.
Okay.
But basically, they are sweepstakes machines that are quasi-legal gambling kiosks that are designed to skirt the city's laws banning video poker. So you actually like do gamble for money. And from what I saw, the ones I was looking at online, it's like you make a purchase in a mall or store or something, and it's like, you made a purchase? Here, use this machine and try to gamble because you're a customer here. So almost like points at a grocery store or something, but they kind of frame it as like, you're like a respected person, and then you're just gambling. You're just straight up gambling.
You're straight up gambling, or are you like gambling with your like loyalty points from the mall?
It's cash, but it is that. So it's like, and it's a touchscreen thing that it seems to me like it is just video gambling.
Yeah, gambling, right. And they have like one thing where it's like, well, it's, you know, it's points. Yeah.
So he, in 2019 and 2020, this guy is a real genius. He claimed $4,000 in taxable income, even though he made over $300,000
$4,000
in 1 year alone because of the sweepstakes machine's profit. So, like all gambling things, it
was
not
illegal.
A good thing to do. Don't do it. Gambling is stupid. So he falsely claimed, this is what I like, he falsely claimed, for these are for tax write-offs, that he drove thousands of miles on business-related trips he never took and donated more than $70,000 to a local Catholic church when, in fact, he didn't donate a penny and wasn't even a parishioner, according to testimony. $70,000.
If you donated... $70,000 to any Catholic church in America, it would be now named your name.
Yeah,
It would be the Nico D'Ambrosia Holy Innocence.
Yes, the D'Ambrosia baptismal font. Take a dip. So basically he didn't pay like $119,000 in income tax over 2 years. He's going to jail. I'm going to also get back to the chat, the group of women that say he's a ghoster and clingy and shitty. So he hired these lawyers, Christopher Groman and Ralph Michek, and they just basically say he's an idiot. Their defense was he's too stupid to have pulled this off. Here's one of the quotes.
This is in court.
This is in court.
This is
his attorney, Christopher Groman. In his closing argument Friday, Groman told the jury the case was not about greed. Quote, it's all about stupidity. I mean, I don't mean to disparage Nico in any way. This is still a quote. But as you can see from his educational records, he's not the most sophisticated human being. Somebody with his skill set is not doing his own taxes, and nor, frankly, should he be. You go to a professional, and the professional Nico relied on was his cousin. So basically, he says he's an idiot.
Oh, man, trying to screw over his own cousin to get out of this.
Yes.
Ooh.
So a month before this is where it ties into the dating accusations.
He's dumb, and he's not loyal to family.
I know, and he might be going to jail. So when the case was going to trial, jurors were asked if they had seen any of the stories in the news about Nico suing these women.
Mm-hmm.
Two raised their hands, said that they had, including one who is ultimately selected to sit on the panel.
Fascinating.
That seems not right, but I don't know law.
Mm-hmm. Sounds okay. Like he should have gotten different lawyers, because if those people were allowed to serve on the jury,
he's not a smart man, Kurt. This guy's making bad choice after bad choice. So the suit that Nico D'Ambrosia, it was a class action lawsuit that alleged that he was defamed and his privacy rights were violated after his name and photo were posted in 2023 in the Chicago chapter of a private Facebook group called Are We Dating the Same Guy?
Whoa.
I'm sure we have a lot of Bananimal listeners and a lot of women Bananimal listeners, and I'm sure some of them are in their own local chapters of Are We Dating the Same Guy? This group gives women a platform to discuss and disparage men in their communities, the lawsuit said. Which, good on them, honestly.
Does it say discuss and disparage men? That's
yes,
what
in
it
their
says?
Local communities their with local which they have had allegedly unsatisfactory dating experiences, according to the lawsuit. The group pontificates, this is again, in the lawsuit, quote, the group pontificates to the world that they are doing the Lord's work by maintaining a platform to permit women to anonymously dox, defame, and attack the moral character of men they met online. So D'Ambrosia alleged he met the woman who first posted about him at an event in Chicago last year. They had consensual sex the same night and later went on a, quote, handful of, quote, unremarkable, end quote, dates. Never engaged in exclusive dating relationships. So they hooked up for a few times and that's that. So in November, the woman, using her real name, posted D'Ambrosia's photo with red flag for other women. We met organically in Chicago 2.5 years ago. Very clingy, very fast. He flaunted his money very awkwardly and kept talking about how I don't want to see his bad side, especially when he was on business calls, the woman stated.
On business calls?
Yeah, on business calls. You don't want to see his bad side on that, Kurt. This guy, he's writing checks and snapping necks, man.
Yeah, he's getting on the phone going, it's a sweepstakes, you jerk.
It's a touchscreen. No, it's not illegal. It's very legal. I'm hanging up on you. I have to drive thousands of miles to donate tens of thousands of dollars to churches I don't attend and never will. So I went out with him a few times, another woman said, over a year ago. He told me what I wanted to hear until I slept with him, and then he ghosted me. I'd steer clear, another woman commented, including screenshots that had the fling. So basically, this dude seems to be going to jail while his lawsuit's around. There's a dozen women he's trying to class action sue, but I think these women all had an experience. They're allowed to talk about it on Facebook. Yeah.
Also, it's a private Facebook group, pal. If you hadn't tried to sue them about it, no one would know about all these things, and now they're part of the public record, you idiot. He is an idiot. Nico D'Ambrosia is an idiot.
Yeah, man. This guy needs to go back to school. I mean, he'll probably come and kill us. So maybe all of this is alleged, Kurt. I think he was found guilty, though. So that the tax fraud part, he definitely did. But, you know, this happened. I won't name names. Mm-hmm. But this happened to somebody you and I both know. And when...
What?
Yeah, we were talking about ideas. And I was like, well, what's something that happened to you that's crazy that you barely tell anybody, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, we were talking about movie ideas. And she told me the story, and it was so fascinating. I actually went to Stephen Ray Morris, and we recorded it when Exactly Right had this studio in Silver Lake, where I just asked our friend questions. And basically, the gist is, and I think she is writing this fun spin of a movie, she dated a British dude, and... every time he would come to New York, they'd hang out and do their thing, and it was really romantic. He like love bombed her and all that stuff. And then slowly over like 2 years, he would like still send her texts and like say how much he missed her, and then say how much he loved her and all these things. But then she could just feel that the thrill was gone, and that he was cooling off and slowly starting to disappear. A quiet quitter, one might say. And then. So she finally kind of like, he was a jerk, and she was like, screw you, I'm not doing this anymore. And then randomly she said she was sitting in her apartment and she picked up a magazine and started reading it. And the article was called something like, Are We Dating the Same Guy? and a woman in England who started describing how it went and said that she ran into somebody else she saw somebody else online, and they started putting it all together, and our friend realized it was the same person. Uh-huh. So she reached out to the writer of this woman that wrote this article, and they found out there were like six of them, and like two of them wanted revenge, and two of them were like, I don't care, screw that guy, was in the past. But it was so fascinating. She was like, Scotty, I sat down, I opened up a magazine, and there it was, like without naming them, without any photos. Whoa. It was just the behavior was all there. And I wonder, I got to talk to Steve and see if he still has that recording, because we were going to just release it as like a one-off to,
yeah,
I don't know. It wasn't like a crime. He didn't commit any crimes. He was just an international jerk, and these women started piecing it together, and then they all became really good friends.
I mean, that's a great story. Also, it should be called International Jerk.
Yes.
And it should be all of their stories. You have six episodes of each woman's story, and then one final one where they all like compare notes, and it's just fun. That's a great
was a true crime network with an incredible international reach and just millions of listeners somewhere out there. Yeah, we should try to figure that out. That could be a fun little Murder Bananas. It could be a Murder Bananas true crime series. Oh, man. You want to tell me a little headline, and then I'll tell you some of our shout outs?
Yeah, I'll tell you a little headline.
Hell yeah.
Okay. You want stuntman or you want cheese?
Let's go cheese.
Scientists played music to cheese as it aged. Hip-hop produced the funkiest flavor. And this is the Smithsonian.
Wow, funky flavors. I have a few shout-outs for you, buddy boy.
All right.
Lainey Bugaboo 22, which is a great handle, wants to shout out her sister Allison. Their mom died in October.
I'm sorry.
Very sorry to hear that. That is never easy. And Allison wanted to take some of their mom's belongings to from Marvel, Tennessee to Tucson, Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of shipping it, they loaded up a rental car and drove the whole way, Curdy B. They intentionally stopped at the silliest things they could find.
Yes.
They did the kind of road trip that you should do, especially if it's siblings. Go see the dumbest stuff, roadside attractions. They saw a glass bathroom. They saw giant pistachios, giant chili peppers. Elena and Allison honored their beloved mother by laughing and being silly the entire way.
Oh, beautiful. That's the best. Thank
beautiful.
You.
Beautiful. Thanks for telling us. The Phoenix women's rugby team, we sponsored them. They sent us their team jerseys.
They're so cool.
They're kick-ass.
They look so good.
We love the Phoenix women's rugby team. We love sponsoring y'all. We'll do it again next year. I'm wearing my jersey to some of these live shows coming up because it's
sweet.
So fun. And it's our logo right across the chest. It's wonderful. We'll see ya soon. I can't wait to see a game out in Phoenix. Indy Elizabeth, who is a day one murder bananimal, who told me that when Karen in Georgia started teasing that Bananas was coming, even from the first ads, we were a day one download, and every Tuesday she listened to us while getting her bachelor's degree in science in a, quote, bumfuck town in Louisiana. She had a very isolated college existence, but Bananas was a welcome distraction during hard times. She graduated and won 3 academic awards.
Oh, hell yeah.
So thank you, Indy. You're the coolest. And last but not least, this one, I might get choked up, so I'm going to do my best. Beth VSW wants to shout out all the Bananimals. 6 months ago, we mentioned a school supply drive she was doing on our podcast, Bananas, and Beth said that a dozen Bananimals donated to it, so much so that she ended up just giving away her last box of colored pencils last week to a migrant student from Mexico who was so excited to get them because he didn't have any school supplies. It's been an absolute joy distributing these supplies to teachers and to the students, so thank you to all the generous Bananimals.
Oh, that's great. Thank you, guys. This is such a good community.
Wow, that is so beautiful. I'm a little misty-eyed over here, but Beth, we love teachers on the pod.
Hell yeah.
Banana of the week to Beth.
Banana of the week. Thank you, Beth.
Great job, everybody. That's what I got, buddy boy.
Sounds good. Here it is.
Mm-hmm.
Scientists played music to cheese as it aged. This is crazy. I'm very surprised by this. This was in Smithsonian Magazine. Researchers played... Okay, here it is. This was by Jason Daly.
Okay.
He is writing about the best stuff in the business on a daily basis. Jason Daly, everybody. Ooh,
Jason Cheeseball Daly.
The creation of good cheese involves a complex dance between milk and bacteria. That's why he's good.
I mean, beautiful.
In a quite literal sense, playing the right tune while this dance unfolds changes the final product's taste, a new study shows.
Mm.
Denise Balabous and Cecile Montavani at Reuters report that hip-hop, for example, Reuters. Gave the cheese an especially funky flavor, while cheese that rocked out to Zeppelin or relaxed with Mozart had milder zests.
Wow.
Last September, Swiss cheesemaker Beat Wampfler... Come on.
I mean...
what is going on?
That's going on my phone. Beat Wampfler.
And a team... And a team of researchers from the Bern University of Arts placed 9 22-pound wheels of Emmental cheese in individual wooden crates in Wampfler's cheese cellar.
Yeah.
Then for the next 6 months, each cheese was exposed to an endless 24-hour loop of one song using a mini transducer, which directed the sound waves directly into the cheese wheels. The, quote, classical cheese mellowed to the sounds of Mozart's The Magic Flute. The rock cheese listened to Led Zeppelin's Stairway to Heaven. So sorry. Mm-hmm. And ambient cheese listened to Yellow's Monolith. The hip-hop cheese was exposed to A Tribe Called Quest Jazz, We've Got.
Yep.
And the techno fromage raved to Vril's UV.
God, I wish that was my nickname in college, Techno Fromage. Oh, I would have been so popular.
Control cheese aged in silence, while three other wheels were exposed to simple, high, medium, and low-frequency tones. According to a press release, the cheese was then examined by food technologists from the Joie Food Perception Research Group, wow, which concluded that the cheese exposed to music had a milder flavor compared to the non-musical cheese. They also found that the hip-hop cheese had a stronger aroma and stronger flavor than other samples. The cheeses were then sampled by a jury of culinary experts during 2 rounds of blind taste tests.
Okay.
The results were similar to the research group conclusions, and hip-hop cheese came out on top. The bacteria did a good job. The experts said
Great
a tribe
job,
called
even.
Quest's cheese was remarkably fruity both in smell and taste and significantly different from the other samples.
Ooh.
Tasting, however, was subjective. Not everyone thought hip-hop was the cheesiest. My favorite cheese was that of Mozart. I like Mozart, but it's not necessarily what I listen to. Maybe a sweet little classical music. It does good to the cheese. It does good to the cheese.
It does do good to the cheese.
Benjamin Luzoy. Now the samples will go through a biomedical survey to see if there are actual differences in the structures of the cheese.
So it's like sort of the rhythms, I guess, like, right? The bass would shake the whatever makes cheese enzymes or...
Time out, Scotty. I'm sorry. While you were asking that question, I just read the next paragraph.
Oh, boy.
I don't know how to understand how this is buried so deep into this article.
Well,
when the experiment started,
cheese stands alone. Yes.
When the experiment started, Wampfler, Beat Wampfler, who is a veterinarian by day and cheesemaker in his free time,
normal.
So it's not told AFP last year that in his experience, all sorts of things can affect the flavor and texture of cheese. Wait, this is just some veterinarian is making cheese in his basement and then just did this experiment, and now it's in the Smithsonian Magazine? What is going on? Beat Wampfler, first off, I thought that was the name of a company. That's the name of a man. There's a man who's like, hi, my name is Beat. I'm Beat. I'm a veterinarian, and I make cheese.
Yeah, Mr. he's got Wampfler. A perfect life in Bern, Switzerland, which is very beautiful.
God, he probably has a perfect life, doesn't he?
He has a perfect life. He has a cabbage garden. He eats raclette and fondue all the time. Man, what a guy. What a guy.
he's just treating dogs and going downstairs to play music to cheese.
Yeah, I went on... in high school, one of my early little high school girlfriends when I was like 14 or 15, it was the kind of dates where you would go and like one parent would drop you off and, you know, another parent would pick you up sometime. And I think I mentioned this years ago, but we went to Bertucci's once and ordered food, and mine had eyeglasses in it. Just somebody's glasses had fallen off into the pasta, just Straight up glasses. just like the glasses you are currently wearing, submerged in pasta. And then they were like, you don't have to pay for that. And then we went and saw a movie. But the same girl, it's crazy.
Do you remember what movie? Out. Do you remember what movie?
No. If I had to guess, it would probably be Executive Decision. It could have been Anaconda. It could have been Anaconda, the J-Lo, Ice Cube, John Voight doing the strangest accent, big snake movie. Let's go with Anaconda, even though I don't think it was that.
I can't believe, so it was like, it was just a giant, I mean, Bertucci sounds like a place that has giant bowls of pasta.
Yeah, it was an Italian chain, and it was, it had big white bowls, and then I got some sort of pasta, Alfredo saw something, and within that were glasses, not sunglasses, like somebody looked, probably had them on their head reading like the
it's ticket, so funny.
Reading the ticket up close. And
then lost them, and then never was like, where are my glasses?
Just plated the bowl and put it up in the window.
Send it out!
I got Alfredo dying in the window up here. The food runner's nervous. Anyways, but so it's crazy that it didn't work out with me and this nice young person, but the next time was like around Valentine's Day, and the big thing, and I bet this was the case too in New Jersey, maybe not. There was a chain, I think it still exists, called The Melting Pot, which was like a fondue restaurant.
Oh, yes.
It is very expensive. Especially when you're 15 years old.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy that it's that expensive.
Yeah, and back then, like, you know, it was probably like $45 a person back then. So that would be like, what, $60 a person now? And when you're 15, you're like,
more than $60 now. It would be like $90 now.
Yeah, everything's crazy expensive. But she was like, it was cool to go to the Melting Pot, like to go on a date
there.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
And, you know, we were 14?
14-year-old? Yeah, of course you want to eat cheese. You want to take bread and have a whole thing to do with it.
Yes, and so should we get a little extra, you know, a little extra dressed up, like, I don't even know what that meant for me. Probably a shirt with like a polo shirt or whatever, like two little britches shirt, probably a little warthog britches shirt. And we get dropped off in Towson. It's right in Towson, Maryland. And we're walking in, and I'm sure we made a cute little phone call reservation, and she's excited, and that we did see this a family we knew. And so then it's like, oh, look how adult we are eating at the Melting Pot. And we order, you know, I'm sure my dad in his kindness probably gave me a little bit of money to help me out. And at some point, 5-10 minutes into the meal arriving, she just starts getting quieter and quieter, and then wraps her hands around her stomach and then starts getting hives. And she was basically lactose sensitive
and she
knew it, but she wanted to go so bad and she wanted to have so much fun, and she was just hoping for the best.
No.
Just dipping everything in cheese and chocolate and cooking, dipping meat and liquid, and this poor little thing. And I'm like, oh, and I don't have a car. I don't have a cell phone.
Yeah.
So it's like, and you're just like a kid stranded, so she's just like, I'm just watching like red coming up her neck.
Oh no.
Just like her cheeks are flushing, and I'm trying to be so nice. And so like,
and she definitely did not tell her parents that she's going to the Melting Pot.
Or she did, and they were like, don't like eat everything but, and then it's like, do you want dessert? And she's, you know, she's like, no, I think I'm okay. And I'm also like, thank God I have exactly $65 in my my Velcro wallet.
My Velcro OP wallet.
Dude. Yes, that's exactly what
100%.
It was.
100%. Like, yes. OP was like mainly wallets, I feel like.
They were crushing the white boy wallet thing in the mid-90s. So I when I started as a writer, so anyways, the date ended in a way that little kids did. Like, I'm sure the poor thing was just in the bathroom and embarrassed. And I was like, I'll just go stand outside. And when I was standing outside, there was like a library nearby that had statues, and it was a father, and it was a mother, father, and then a kid on both sides, and the mom's hand was on the back of the statue's daughter's head.
Yeah.
And for some reason, when I first started writing scripts in my 20s in New York and trying to get like jobs as a writer, I would always start it with people leaving a Melting Pot. And then narrowly avoiding a car accident.
Uh-huh.
And then the car would swerve and jump the curb and take out the torso of the kid. But then the mom's hand was still holding the head up. And I must have put it in three scripts. And my first agent was like, well, let me see some writing samples. And she's like, did you see somebody get decapitated at the Melting Pot? And I was like, I just had this joke that was like, what do you do for fun? And I'm like, I realized it was like, oh, now it's real. Now I can't just write the silliest things in. Now people are actually reading this shit.
What do you do for fun?
What else do you do for fun? And I was like, oh, that's a fun little joke. But yeah, it's to the point where Cece was like, I don't know what you experienced, but this is in a lot of your scripts. And I like it. But did something happen to you as a young boy?
Oh,
anyways,
I love that
shout
so
out to
much.
The Melting Pot. I if they still exist, you and I will never go. But
I would love to go to the Melting Pot. Are you kidding me? Well, let's see. Melting Pot.
Is there one in Madison? I heard there's a
bar
in Madison.
The original fondue.
Latibra.
Let's see locations. They're
awesome.
All over the place, dude.
Yeah, we just live in old Health World USA.
No, there's one in Thousand Oaks. We could go. Is there one in Jersey? Oh, yeah. One in Red Bank, baby. Maple Shade, Westwood.
Uh-oh. Are we about to double date at a Melting Pot?
I would drive out to Thousand Oaks.
Should we triple date? Who else do we know loves dipping cheese? And
I would love to do this.
Let's triple date at a Melting Pot.
I'm in.
Let's throw
me?
Caution to the wind. Let's not crap for a week.
Scotty, send me home.
I got one that I picked out for you. I think I found it. Yes, I did. Okay, so when you and I were in Philly, I did the story that like a crazy percentage of people think that they could land a plane with. Okay. So while like flying back, I saw this article. Associated Press, written by Joan Lowy. I think it is Lowy, Lowy. If it's Lowry, I'm sorry. We've definitely used stories from Joan before.
Really?
She's the best in the biz. Yeah, I think she
knocks
out
Lowy. Wowie.
Captain Sully Sullenberger's miracle on the Hudson.
Mm-hmm.
Safety advice was not carried out.
Wait, what?
This is interesting.
Okay.
Because I was working at Two Boots, maybe with Emily Lindskog, the day that happened.
Mm-hmm.
You were definitely in New York when that
definitely.
Happened.
Definitely. Didn't notice it.
Nope. Just carried on with our day. Kept slinging pizzas. Washington, in the 7 years since airline captain Sully Sullenberg, so this must have been an older article, saved 155 lives by ditching his crippled airliner in the Hudson River, there's been enough time to write a book about it, make a movie, and apparently not enough time to carry out most of the safety recommendations stemming from the accident.
Are you joking?
Of the 35 recommendations made by the National Transportation Safety Board in response to the incident involving U.S. Airways Flight 1549, only 6 had been heeded.
That's also the National Transportation Safety Board, probably one of the most boring organizations on planet Earth.
Gotta be.
Is the bad guy in Clint Eastwood's movie about Sully Sullenberger. If you ever watch Sully, have you seen it?
The movie Sully, open in theaters.
The bad guys are the National Transportation Safety Board.
Yes.
It's so weird. It's like how much Clint Eastwood is like, hates big government. He's just like, and these are the evil villains, the people who are just trying to make things slightly more safe for human beings.
That's right. So that movie starred Tom Hanks as Chesley Sully Sullenberger. The plane lost thrust in both engines after colliding with a flock of Canadian snow geese shortly after taking off from LaGuardia in New York City. No one died. Truly a miracle. And only 5 people were seriously injured. But investigators turned up problems. This could happen again, and we want to make sure that it does. If it does, there are better safety measures in place. Okay, let me get to some of the good ones.
Okay, great. Did my question as well, after you get to these good ones, is did the plane sink? And did they have to then go get a crane and get it up off the floor? Or
no idea.
Did they somehow keep it afloat until they could get it on a barge or something? Like,
I don't know. Maybe the East River and the Hudson, when they connect, are so dirty that it just props it up with filth and debris and corpses and oysters. Weirdly, they have oysters in there.
They do a lot.
Let's see. The untold story of the miracle in the Hudson was part luck, played in preventing catastrophe on the freezing afternoon in 2009. The wind chill was 2 degrees and the temperature of the water was 41 degrees. So you're a surfer.
Wow.
That's cold.
Yes, 41. Yes. Typically around 38 is what you get in the open ocean in the mid-January, February.
Woo. Raising the risk of cold shock, a condition which people lose use of their arms and legs, they usually drown within 5 minutes. So truly a miracle that didn't happen.
It's amazing.
It was sheer chance that the plane, an Airbus A320, was equipped with rafts, life vests, and seat cushions that could be used for flotation. The equipment is only required on extended overwater flights and not on flights from New York to Charlotte, as that flight was.
Oh, wow.
So total luck that all that stuff was on there. The NTSB recommended requiring life vests and flotation cushions on all planes, regardless of the route. But the FAA responded that it was leaving that up to the airlines. So here's the part that is bananas. The NTSB's investigation found that only 10 passengers retrieved their life vests, and not all of those 10 even put them on correctly. Guys, bananas. Just pay attention next time you're on a plane. If you don't know, I mean, it is... It's crazy to me. 10 of the total flight of 155 on board. Only 10 put them on and not all correctly.
I love it. Also, how do you... It's a U, and you put your head through the U, and you just put a strap around your... Like, how could you...
And then you pull
in what
the
way
thing,
could you... How do you put you it on wrong? Are people just stepping through it and then putting it around their belly?
I sure hope thing? That's what they were doing. I sure hope
maybe,
that was what
maybe
they were doing.
Sliding it so they're like wearing it like underwear with like one like a noodle poodle, like a pool noodle.
Yeah, that sounds exciting. That sounds like what if you were gonna die? I guess it's hey, you only got 15 seconds. So the two rear rafts were submerged immediately and unusable. That only left the two forward rafts, which are only designed to hold a maximum of 110 people. That sounds like a lot of people, honestly.
Yeah.
110 people, that's a lot of people on a couple rafts. Mm-hmm. But that's well short of the 155 on board. And many of the passengers wound up just standing on the wings as the plane gradually sank into the river.
It was such a crazy photo to see people just standing on the wing.
Yes, so the NTSB, Clint Eastwood's biggest enemy in the world, recommended changing the location of the rafts. Great idea. I think this proved to be true to ensure capacity for all passengers on flights, since it's unlikely that rear rafts would be available in future accidents. let's see. Some of the passengers wound up using the inflated exit ramps as rafts, even though they're not designed for that. But... typical New Yorker behavior, just by any means necessary, whatever is good for me. Passengers weren't able to release the ramps from the plane, and they ran the risk of the ramps being pulled underwater along with the plane. So they couldn't detach the ramps from the plane. So if the plane was sinking, they were just going to go down.
Oh, wow.
The NTSB recommended requiring quick release attachments for the ramps. Pretty good, I'd say. The FAA rejected that advice. What is going on between the FAA and the NTSB? Talk about hate. Those two just that should
they
be a
really hate each
show.
Other.
Oh man. Anyways, I know we're running a little short on time. We did a show called Bad Ideas with Adam Devine, and we shot at an airplane graveyard in the Mojave Desert. It's on Roku. If anybody's bored, they're very fun. I think it's 9 episodes. They're about 12 minutes long max. But we did one where these planes out in the desert are humongous, 767, 747s, giant planes from the last 50 years.
Yeah.
And they're just parked out there rotting. Sometimes they get picked for parts, but they're just rusting out, and they get filled with snakes. And so we sent Adam, who his number one fear when we started the show was snakes, and Brent Morin, who's a really funny comic, to go onto these planes and start pulling out snakes from these planes.
Oh, my God.
And when we went, we were in this one jumbo jet, like a two-story, huge, like Emirates plane or whatever. It was actually really cool because they were like time capsules.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you see like the technology of like how crappy, like they used to have phones with cords on planes.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that? You'd swipe a card. It was like, and then they had like really shitty TVs, and you see what first class used to look like. It was a fascinating thing because I spent basically an entire day on rusting out giant dead planes while Adam and Brent caught snakes. And we found an area in the plane where they had tons, and I mean like 50 life preservers, like the kind that they do the demonstration on.
Yeah.
And on camera, Adam puts one on, and just to see if it still works, yanks the cord, and the CO2 inflated instantly. And then we spent an hour just recording Brent and Adam just constantly pulling. It was such wish fulfillment. I'm sure at least once it made it on the plane. Then they got drunk using airplane mini bottles.
Perfect.
Found on the plane.
Oh, really?
Then we did it some more. Oh, yeah. These things are abandoned. Like, basically, they would be like, okay, this one has damage to a wing. It's old model. Just drag it out to the desert, and whatever was in there was in there.
Whoa. Oh, my God. That's crazy they wouldn't clean it out. That's crazy.
Some are gutted. You can tell that some parts were really... But, yeah, some of these jumbo jets, you had to climb up, like, a stair walkway and jump from the walkway onto the plane like 50 feet in the air, 40 feet in the air. Again, snakes on these things. It was so crazy. But yeah, the highlight of the day was the second round of, after those two were already drunk, just taking turns seeing which ones were dead, or which life preservers were dead and which ones weren't. And those things, the fact that 10 people put them on and they couldn't even figure out how to use them, Bananimals, I implore you, just pay attention the next time you're on a flight and really think about what they're saying to you. And then for the rest of your life, just look at your phone and look at TikTok. We get it. I do the same thing.
Oh, man. I can't believe I've known you for this long, and this is the first time I've heard the story about the snakes on the plane and the liquor bottles.
Well, if you have Roku, you can watch it. It was a damn funny show. I haven't told that many stories about our time doing bad ideas, but Adam put himself in serious peril, and I just stood off camera in medium peril going, yeah, look good. Let's go again.
Well, folks, thank you so much for listening to another episode of Bananas. Thank you to everyone out there, every single Bananimal.
We love you all.
This is a very cool community, and you guys are very cool people.
Well said. Bananas Podcast.
Yes.
Bananas is an Exactly Right Media production.
Our producer and engineer is Katie Levine.
The catchy Bananas theme song was composed and performed by Kahan.
Artwork for Bananas was designed by Travis Millard.
And our benevolent overlords are the great Karen Kilgariff and Georgia Hardstark.
And Lisa Maggot is our full human, not a robot intern.
Bananas.